Hello again, and good morning. It's a great morning here at 88.1 The Arch. You know, that's something I've always wondered about. People always say good morning, as if every morning is just good. Sometimes you just have a fantastic morning, and could I just describe that as simply good? Definitely not. As you know, precise speech leads to a more precise life, and I'm just trying to make the world a little clearer. So, great morning. You're listening to Great Morning Gateway, and my name is Hugo Jackson. What made my morning so great, you ask? Well, I guess now that I think about it, I just got up on the right side of bed, so to speak. Gave a kiss to the old wife, headed out to the studio. I was welcomed by this cool fog yet again. If you don't wake up early, I seriously suggest giving it a go. I find the darkness and the silence really center me, and they give me the space to prepare for the day, you know, that sort of me time. And the rising sun just gleams off of that huge gateway arch in such a beautiful way. It's that arcing spark, that rising rhythm. You hear the creaks of wagons and the yawns of paperboys on their morning route. The whole world slowly shifts from its slumber. It's quite beautiful. Okay, now that we've gotten my weekly monologue out of the way, I think it's time to get to the good stuff. The stuff you're actually here for. My radio show. Now, where did we leave off? Oh yes, me giving a completely nerdy gasp at Chame's mention of Yellowstone. So, I will pick up right there. I sat there in awe and tingling with excitement. Yellowstone. I'd always heard stories about the crater. You've all heard the myths and legends. The first spark to ignite the events that would lead to October 23rd, 1952, the day when the bombs fell, of course. Apparently, it used to be an enormous park before, back when the United States was all of America, not just a xenophobic corner of the Northeast like they are today. Either they didn't know about the enormous volcano hiding in plain sight, or they just didn't care. Perhaps they did care, and they knew, but realized there was nothing they could do if it exploded. Which, of course, it did. Trillions of tons of ash into the air, coating the world in white, and cleaving America into two. That scar still persists, probably visible from space. Thousands of miles of dunes spreading out into the hazy horizon. A white static to choke every living thing around with just its sheer enormity. Of course, all these things added up to an immense legend surrounding this ground zero, the crater itself. I'm sure you've all heard about the stories or rumors from people claiming to have been there, about the Ashen people, weird cults, supernatural occurrences, even old war laboratories, and, of course, the Puppet Master. I can neither confirm nor deny these things. All that I can do is to give you my account of my experience, and to leave you to piece together an impression of Yellowstone yourself. Now, back to the story. For real this time. We talked a while longer, sitting in a small circle, almost whispering. I presented myself as Hugo Jackson, the able-bodied wastelander who had lots of experience surviving those American badlands, a veritable passport to the dangerous outer world. You see, I really wanted to join them, so I tried as much as I could to sell myself. I would deal with the repercussions later, when they would realize that, in many ways, I was probably more incompetent than them. Still, I could see it working its magic, albeit slowly. That glint in their eyes grew with every boasting remark, every flex. They also introduced themselves, albeit much more truthfully than I. The tall Chinese girl with eyes as black as night. Her name was Xia Mei. She introduced herself first and then motioned to the younger girl to her left and remarked that this girl's name was Lili. Lili spoke up and her eyes met mine, finally for the first time, and her hand outstretched to shake my hand. A firm grip. It was a determined shake. You know, the very satisfying, perfect sort of tension on a handshake? She has a good handshake. The guy was almost packed into the corner, with his legs hugging his chest. He softly said his name was Mao Ping, as if he had already rehearsed and honed in on a very artful way to say his name. I liked him. There was something calming about him. There was something energetic about Li Li, and something interesting about Xiamei. All in all, a great group, and I was excited to get to know them better, if they would let me. I wanted to know where they came from, why they were going to Yellowstone, why they couldn't stay in Little San Francisco with the other Chinese people, and a lot more, but there wasn't much time, and I wanted to get to the point. I brought my attention to Xiamei once again and gave the pitch. It seems you guys have a long journey ahead of you. I don't know how you all exactly got here, but further north is... it's a lot harder. The ash dunes, bigger Mormon presence, and, of course, whatever you guys encounter at the rim of Yellowstone Crater. You'd better be prepared for it. Now, here, luckily for you guys, I can help. Because I was on my way to Yellowstone too, and I figured I'd actually go into the caldera this time after passing by it so many times in my various journeys and whatnot throughout. After talking with you all, I like your group's vibe, and if you are willing, I'd be up to help guide you guys up there, through those dunes, through those Mormon patrols, through all the bullshit. What do you say? The group sat in silence before Xiamei narrowed her eyes. If you know this place so well, why weigh yourself down? Are we just supposed to believe you want to help us for no other reason than the goodness of your own heart? Li Li recoiled and glared at Xiamei, with daggers in her eyes and a tight grip on Xiamei's arm. Xiamei noted this and continued, I don't want to seem ungrateful or rude, but I'm just trying to be safe, just like you and everyone else. I pondered for a moment and gave a sly smile. Look, you're right. There isn't much you guys can offer me, so refuse my offer. It'll probably be better for me anyways. Of course, there's a risk in letting someone travel with you, but it seems to me that's a risk you might have to be willing to take. What I'm looking for is some reason to leave this dumpy little town. And call me a bit of a romantic, but I do like the idea of helping someone out. Believe it or not, I'm someone who wants to get out there, someone who likes to meet new people, and someone who enjoys an interesting journey, with some interesting people, of course. So, accept me or not, I'll find someone else, some other group. God knows all the interesting things and people that are out there. Look, I'm tired, so if you're interested, knock on my door when Mary kicks you out, and we'll talk then. If not, then thanks for the conversation. I have truly enjoyed meeting you, Xiamei, and you, Li Li, and of course, Mao Ping. Good night, guys. I got up as casually as I could and sauntered to the door. Xiamei gave me an ambivalent wave out of the hand, and Li Li stared me down as I exited the room. I immediately ran to my room, slapping myself across the face, groaning with intense regret. What the hell was that, Hugo? What kind of stupid sales pitch did you just give? I was flush with embarrassment. But that is something that they will never know, because half an hour later, I opened the door to Xiamei. I put out my most disinterested grin and said, Hey, she started. We thought about it, and yes. We would really appreciate your help and guidance on this journey of ours. Just keep in mind, Hugo, that the safety of my sister comes first, always. I don't mean to be rude or presumptuous, but it is important for me to say it. Her needs will always come first in my eyes, so just remember that. I felt a pang of joy that I had to gulp down in order not to scream. Of course, get your stuff together and in an hour meet me outside by the front door. I did a little dance when I got to my room, told Eddie that I was leaving and that his acquaintance was really quite enjoyable, and started to jog up the canyon so I'd have enough time to say a proper goodbye to Jeremy before I left. As it was Saturday, Jeremy would be home, and I wondered exactly what I wanted to say to him, how to tell him how much of an effect he had on me, how the generosity he had shown me, the openness with which he shared his ideas and home, had been really important to me. I guess, looking back on it, I still sort of want to be like him. There was a seriousness with which he did everything, this earnesty, and when I saw it in him, I saw it in myself. and I wanted to tell him all these things, but when I got there and knocked on his door and peered in his house, I realized that he wasn't home. And after waiting 10 minutes, I realized he wouldn't be home in time. With a somber and regretful heart, I wrote a small note in my journal and ripped it out. I placed this note on the doorstep and placed a small rock on top of it. As I walked away, I felt that deep pain of regret, a pain I still feel today. I haven't seen him since, and I hope I didn't hurt him too badly. I still think of him often, and I use what he taught me every single day. I know he isn't listening to this, but if you're out there, Jeremy, thank you. Now, we spent the rest of the day stocking up on resources before heading out. I made sure they all bought goggles, masks, ash shoes, proper backpacks. They seemed to be carrying a lot of money, which helped expedite the process, of course. I had saved up a decent amount and made sure to buy the requisite parts of gear for myself as well. We stocked up on water and food and headed back north through the mountain route. As we passed through the northern gate to Salt Lake, I pointed at the long line of travelers and remarked about how I was so rudely denied entry before. A funny little memory I have is when describing how the guard slapped me, Lily gave this laugh which turned into more of a snort, which in turn made me laugh, because that's freaking funny, which of course made her laugh even harder. And by the end, the whole group was in tears. It seems we desperately needed some sort of icebreaker, and whether we were going to force it or not, it worked. To be honest, it felt really, really nice to be with people that I could joke around with. Soon, we hit the dunes. We fastened our shoes, popped on the goggles, and we slid on those masks. While I walked upon the rims, charting our path via compass, and while I was looking into the horizon for signs of other people, the other three were down in the valleys, playing in the ash or sliding down the milky white sides, or simply just running their hands on the static surface. I felt pride that I had shown them the proper way, that I was their guide. Finally helping people. Good job, Hugo. On the first night, we set up our tarp and decided to camp in the shelter of a lucky outcropping of rock. The canyon walls dripping and petrified, and the sand was shifting through the cracks and going out, misting into the wind. The amber glow of the fire and the white pallor of our bleached skin. As we opened up to each other, or really as they opened up to me, I began to learn parts of their unique languages too. What was simply just a glint in the eye to me beforehand became a knowing glance or some sarcastic smirk. I learned that although Mao Ping had this soft, loving exterior, he had this biting, this dry, dark humor that seemed to make almost everything equally absurd and hilarious. And with Xiao Mei, it was almost the opposite. While she had a very hard and direct exterior, sometimes, if you were just lucky, you'd be able to see a tiny bit beneath that front. Yeah, here's a time. One of those nights when we had camped at the base of this enormous dune, probably, 90, 100 feet high. I remember I was restless after trying for a couple hours to sleep, but I just gave up. You know, sometimes you just call it quits for a little bit at least. I looked around to see Lili and Mao Ping fast asleep, but Xiao Mei nowhere to be seen. Well, this wasn't a huge cause for alarm yet. I resolved to try to see where she was, in case she needed help getting back. I slowly climbed the side of this 100-foot titan, zigzagging upward, watching the mini landslides with every footstep, until I was at the top, and I found Xiao Mei sitting at the top, all alone, hugging her knees tightly, still as a statue, looking out at the scene. It was this light blue-white in all directions, the gray ground illuminated by the bright full moon and tinted by the deep blue sky. I wordlessly and delicately sat myself next to her. I could hear her sniffling and turned my head to look at her. She didn't move or acknowledge my existence, just kept staring ahead, with puffy red eyelids and a quivering bottom lip. I put my head down, humbled, patient, feeling. We just sat there for a while, watching the moon shuffle its way down the painted sky. At some point, she turned to me and put her hand above my arm, hovering with tension. She looked down at her feet as I looked back at her. She finally whispered, "Thank you, Hugo. I'm scared. This world is so big." At the same time, we both went in for the hug. Holy catharsis. I actually began crying a bit too, if I'll be honest. You know, a lot had happened in my life. I guess I had a lot of pent-up emotions as well, even if I didn't realize it. It really helped me as well. She flashed me this vulnerable smile of compassion and understanding and handed me a handkerchief to blow my nose. I'll have to say I was a little embarrassed, but it was nice, you know, just to have that release. We walked down the Titan in cozy silence, contemplating and numb. Needless to say, I was able to get back to sleep, and I'm sure she was too. Anyway, that's just one of the memories that I have. Sticks with me, you know? Think about it sometimes when you're washing dishes or something. So, we kept on trekking. Traveling through ash is painfully slow, especially if you aren't used to it. You start to feel it everywhere, taste it with every breath, every dry swallow. Even with the masks, our lungs begin to become crackly, paper thin and crumbling with every cough. I tried to put on a good face for the others, but it was really getting to me. It was also particularly getting to Mao Ping, who I had by that point gathered was used to a more quote-unquote comfortable lifestyle. Although he also tried to put his head down and get through, he couldn't help but complain, which got, it got pretty annoying, honestly, I do remember that. During those blazing days, he would just be at the back of the group, whimpering and whining, and Xiaomei and Lili would give me this look, like, yep, there he goes again. But what he drained from us during the day, he would give back in spades during the night. You see, Mao Ping was a fantastic storyteller. He had this incredible knowledge of ancient Chinese history, legends, myths. He'd go on around the fire, spinning these intricate tales like a master weaver, teasing out all sorts of philosophical and emotional implications to his stories. He would take on this alluring quality. His eyes would get wide, his gestures would sweep around. He was also a great cook, too, which I would learn more about later on, but even with the sparse materials we had brought, he was able to whip up something restaurant quality. He had these two Chinese ingredients. Five spice powder. And, star anise? Yeah, I remember these two. He had this jar of five spice, and star anise are these little seed pods. And it took some getting used to these spices, but I quickly learned to appreciate the taste. And now you will not find me in a kitchen without some five spice powder. It's great stuff. In retrospect, I could totally understand why Lili fell for him. Oh, yeah. Did I mention that Lili and Mao Ping were together? Yes. They were friends since childhood, and they naturally went to boyfriend-girlfriend. Mao Ping loved that girl, man. Seemed to know exactly what she needed at exactly the right time. Like watching a couple do the waltz, perfectly in tune. If I ever have anyone to care for me as much as that guy cared for that girl, man, I would be set. The sun was white hot, beaming down with a concentrated fury. At one point, Lili fainted of heat exhaustion, which sent both Mao Ping and Xiaomei scurrying to help her. We ended up resting for the rest of the day, and we began to run out of water. To combat heat exhaustion, we began traveling at night and sleeping during the day. I started to see things as well, mysterious lumps as ashen people, or black spots in the distance as bandits. There's this sinking feeling when you're walking through ash. You feel it when you sleep, when you blink. Everything feels like it's being swallowed down into the ground, into that mysterious gray death. It really took a toll on all of us, definitely. I mean, sometimes I still feel that when I'm trying to go to bed, even here in the gateway, just that sinking feeling. It's really hard to explain, but if you know, you know. As the journey went on, we began to talk less. Just stared down at our feet, or at the dark line of the horizon. I realized I had probably missed the opportunity to ask for the reason to traveling to the Yellowstone crater, and trying not to pry, I stopped asking after my question was deflected a couple of times. One night, or I guess day, because we slept during the day and traveled at night. So one day, one night, I woke up in a daze, all sweaty and dry, and I looked up into the distance to see Lily talking with a small group of probably about four or so. They seemed to surround her, and I felt this off vibe about the whole thing. So I began to walk up to see what was going on. I staggered to the crest of the dune, still groggy, and widened my eyes at an entire platoon of 15 or 16 men, all dressed to the teeth in gear, looking grisly and battle-hardened, leaning on the other side of the dune. Oh, damn. As I slowly walked towards the group, Lily saw me and motioned for me to come. As I approached, she whispered, "Don't worry, I've got this." I trusted her and sat back, eyeing the scene. There was a tall, broad-shouldered man at the front of the group, with a mean grimace and an eye patch, like a real Great Lakes pirate. He gritted his teeth and continued, "It just doesn't seem right, not very right at all. Three Chinese and a fella from the gateway all the way out here. Hey, boys, it seems suspicious, doesn't it?" There were grunts of affirmation, a ravenous hunger in their eyes. Lily glowered, made fists with her hands. "We gotta do our jobs, missy. I sure hope you understand. As reconnaissance, you know what that means, right? That means we look for bad guys, for our country of God-loving Mormons. Bad guys who spy, especially Chinese bad guys. Seems there's a whole lot of those still left. As reconnaissance, we have to assess the situation, and it sure seems fishy. We might need to confiscate some of your supplies for further observation. As evidence, of course." Lily crossed her arms and centered her feet. She wasn't going down easy. "So, you are part of the Mormon reconnaissance branch of the military?" The man gave a toothy grin. He had bad teeth. One of his two front teeth was missing, and a black and yellow tint covered the other smelly thing. "Well, yes I am, missy. Work for the president himself. Work to protect this very land. Us boys here been protecting this waste here for 3 decades now. This is our home and you're sleeping in it." Lily pressed on. "Do you know and follow the teachings of the angel Moroni? Do you take his word as law and let his light guide your heart and soul?" The man leaned back and crossed his arms in response. "Well, of course I do. We all do. Where are you going with this, huh?" Lily stepped toward him, causing him to shuffle back a little bit. "I, including all of my group, are devout members of the church. I am your sister, as you are my brother. As such, I would like to highlight Moroni 2:13. Always treat your brothers and sisters with compassion, and welcome them into your home, and give them your best bread, as this is the proper way to treat members of your family." The man raised an eyebrow, partly in shock and partly in skepticism. "So, you've read the book. So what? Chinese are good with books. This doesn't mean nothing. I'm not buying the whole brother, sister, Mormon thing." Lily paused, nodded, then snapped back. "Moroni 3:19. And Brigham Johnson ruled Zion with a wooden fist from the Great Salt Lake to Zion. Like wood, he was tough and strong and would not be easily moved. He resolved to protect his tribe against those who would seek to destroy him. But he, like wood, was slowly changing, growing, and adaptable. Those who proved their piety to the faith would be slowly allowed passage through Deseret in communion with its citizens." The man's demeanor changed, along with his men. There was something off about them, like they were taken by surprise, seeing something they had never seen before. My guess was the whole seeing something they had never seen before thing hadn't happened in a long time. I got the impression that patrolling the dunes isn't the most eventful thing in the whole world. The man said, "And this whole magic trick is supposed to prove your piety to me? Is that what's supposed to be, huh?" I could tell Lily was beginning to falter. Her display was running out of steam, and the man wasn't showing any signs of a tremendous change of heart. She looked to me with a small grimace that said, "Help me." Luckily, I had just the thing. I spoke up from the side, practically startling the group of men who had all but forgotten I existed. "Look here. These are notes that I took on the Moroni Bible. I've written down thoughts I've had about the faith, and I've even copied down some passages. It's all right here." I silently high-fived my slightly younger self for keeping such good notes. The man thumbed through my little book, while some of the men behind him creeped up to see what was in the little journal. He slowly handed it back to me and put his hands on his hips. He furrowed his brow, looked at Lily, and then back to me, and then to Lily, and then back to me. Just then, one of the men in the back murmured, "They do look pretty dedicated." Another one affirmed it, "Yeah, this would be a hard one to fake." The man looked back at his men, who were all wearing surprised nods of approval. He looked back at us and said, "Okay, fine. Me and my men will decide to believe you. Just be grateful that we're such pious members of the church, and that I'm feeling extra trust in today." Lily bowed and gave thanks, and I did the same. As the men slowly got up and began to walk away, out of earshot, Lily looked at me and gave me this great big smile. "Hugo, thanks." I replied, "No, thank you. I have so many questions. How do you know the Moroni Bible so well? Are you Mormon? Have you..." Just then, we were cut off by sounds of mad scurrying down the dune. We looked down to see Mao Ping and Xiaomei sprinting up the side of the dune, practically on all fours. Lily sighed and put her head in her hands.
"Lily, what happened? What did they do to you?" said Xiaomei.
"Why didn't you tell us? Are you safe? Who were they?"
said Mao Ping. By the time they got here, I could tell by the look on Lily's face that she had already been in this kind of scenario before. Xiaomei sprinted up and grabbed Lily by the shoulders, hugging her.
"I don't want you putting yourself into danger, okay? Please, please wake us up first. You should have woken us up. Hugo, what happened?"
I replied, "You can ask her. She held herself perfectly well." Xiaomei rolled her eyes, deflecting what I said, while Mao Ping began to lead her down the dune. As we walked down, she looked back at me and gave me a little eyebrow raise, a small secret victory. For me, I walked down thinking one thing and one thing only. Damn, Lily's a badass. Feeling more like I was part of the group, I led them further north. Using the map I had brought, it didn't seem overly far on paper, but of course, ass traveling takes much, much longer. I mean, we can just walk to the grocery store here and just get something easily. If there were feet of ash, I mean, all of a sudden, that's a whole day activity, I swear. Still, we had gotten pretty close despite all the ash stuff. In the distance, we could see these fantastic mountains, and I remarked that we were close. Just past those peaks lay the fabled Yellowstone. Looking at my map, those peaks were labeled as Tetons or Tetons or Tetones or something. I never got the pronunciation down. They were absolutely stunning. Sometimes a group would simply stop to gawk in awe when the sun hit those snowy beaks, those chrome peaks. It was so awesome. The reflecting power of the sun beamed down and lit the surrounding area with a radiance that came close to, I don't know, holiness. I swear that it might have been one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. In regards to holiness, like I mentioned, I learned some crucial information about the group during this period. Perhaps it was that radiance of the Tetons that opened up their hearts to trust me, or perhaps it was a mutual, unspoken understanding that I wasn't just going to dump them in Yellowstone, that fate would bind me to them for far, far longer. Anyway, as we had just cleared the mountains and decided to make a campfire for the night, a lull in the conversation led to Xiaomei nimbly walking to Mao Ping and then to Lily to talk about something in Chinese. They conferred for a few minutes in hushed tones, before all sitting back down, with the tension of a conversation unshared. Shamay started.
I know we haven't told you much about us, and for that we are sorry. For certain reasons, we must stay anonymous, under the radar, so to speak. But we have greatly appreciated your help and guidance and company during this difficult trip, and we've decided to share a little bit more with you about ourselves, if that is okay with you. I almost chuckled at how formal and awkward she was being about the whole thing, but then again, I wasn't the one to judge, and I really wanted to hear what she had to say, so I eagerly nodded my head. Of course, Xiaomei.
Okay.
We are Chinese, and we are also Mormon. Yes, those exist. However, we are not the same kind of Mormon as the ones who rule Deseret, the ones you stayed with in Crimson Canyon. It is similar to, what is it called? Oh, yes, Protestant and Catholic. They are both considered Christian, yes? It is the same for us. While we are Mormon, we follow the teachings and legacy of Samuel Smith, not Brigham Johnson. I had heard of this while talking with Jeremy. Apparently, in the period after the bombs, early Deseret history, probably the 60s or so, 1960s, before the Mormon people left Salt Lake City for the first time to find Carson City, in the beginning of the whole Mormon group, there was an extreme difference in leadership, and the population was pretty split. Brigham Johnson at the time wanted to stay in Salt Lake, further scavenging and hunting. But another man, Samuel Smith, was the leader of a coalition who believed that venturing into the world was the only way to adapt to the way things had changed. This Smith guy argued that by sticking to old world monuments, sculptures, and nostalgia, the Mormon people would have no chance against groups who would arise far more adapted and suited to this new world. The way Jeremy had described it, Samuel Smith had led a considerable number of scared, innocent Mormon families in a suicidal act of treason, that he had corrupted their mind with his own personal death wish. They set out into the ash, and were never seen again, all perished and eaten by the roiling earth, supposedly. So, Shamay continued, we believe in the second coming of Jesus Christ through Samuel Smith, and live our lives by the holy book of Smith. It might seem strange to you to see three Chinese Californians such devout Mormons, but there is a reason. Lili and I both grew up as part of a very rich and influential Chinese family, with ties and connections at the top of the government. Although our parents did not know, the man who was tasked with our education was secretly a disciple of Smith, educated deep in the Yellowstone crater, and had managed to infiltrate Chinese high society. When we were in our early adolescence, he showed us the Holy Book of Smith and changed our lives forever. We read it so many times that it has been burned into our minds. As a comparison, we read the Moroni Bible as well, and that is why Lili was able to quote passages from the Moroni Bible from memory. This teacher, before he disappeared, gave us instructions to meet him at Yellowstone, and a special note which would help us once we arrived. That is why we are headed to Yellowstone, to receive further training and information, so that we may be able to live a proper life under Smith and God. Shamay sighed, releasing what seemed like tons of tension. I raised my eyebrows, trying to process this veritable information dump. I had learned more about them in the past 2 minutes than I had known about their histories ever, pretty much. Mao Ping was fixated on his nails, and Lili was staring intensely right at me, waiting for an answer. I gathered my thoughts. The only thing I could really think was awesome. It felt sort of childish, but Chinese Mormons? I mean, that's pretty cool, man. So, that's what I said. Cool, man. Xiaomei raised her eyebrows, guarded. She looked to Lili, who looked to Mao Ping in turn. There was this apprehension in the air. He looked to me, and he shrugged. Okay, man. Sounds good. The group eased up, and we headed out the next day, all feeling invigorated by how close we were to the rim and I think, how close we were getting to each other. Passing those Tetons gave us this incredible boost, and the ash seemed to clear to only a surface dusting. Only a couple days' travel away, and the excitement was palpable. On the other hand, we needed to stay low and travel carefully. The mysteries of Yellowstone had brought all sorts of people there, with all kinds of motivations. It was my feeling that something bad could happen if we ran into the wrong sorts of people with the wrong sorts of motivations. After a day of travel, we saw in the distance a large mountain range, which, after conferring with my map and seeing no mountain ridge labeled or drawn, made me very scared we had taken a wrong turn somewhere. Xiaomei and I spent a while looking at the map and their surrounding areas, trying to catch some landmarks to triangulate our position. We had definitely passed the Tetons, and by the map, we should have been looking directly at a huge hole in the ground, but instead there was this scarred range curving to either side of the horizon. Very fearful that we had been using the wrong map, we pressed on anyways and decided to climb over the range to see if we could keep going on to the Yellowstone crater. We zigzagged up the rocky slopes, grasping at mangled roots and springy sprouts. After about a half day's hike, we ate the last of our food, almost up the mountain. I ate quickly and decided to hike up ahead, feeling restless. I made my way up the side, getting faster with each little jump, each hoist and grunt. I grew to a satisfying rhythm, and just as I climbed over a big sharp boulder, I gasped, looking down to see a sheer drop hundreds of feet down. I recoiled instantly, landing squarely on my butt, with my legs dangling off the side of the cliff. I followed the line of the ridge to the right, seeing it curve to the left into the horizon, like the edge of a cup or a bowl. My hands grasped at the worn stone, and I used it to center myself. As I finally realized what I was looking at, my hand went to my open mouth and my eyes widened. A small pebble, loosened by my presence, went careening off the side, diving and plinking from cliff overhang to bloody sedimentary stone. It spent a while in the air, reaching terminal velocity, then punching a hole right through an outstretched leaf. I followed the plant and looked out into the enormous hole, the enormous void. As the cliff eventually gave way to dirt, dirt gave way to a verdant explosion of greenery, shrubs, trees, bushes, and bulbs, lush and lively, orange pollen air out into that Wyoming haze. I heard the roar of a bird from over my head and saw it dive down into the crater, a falcon taking a dip in the Pacific Ocean. It soared ahead, its screeches an assertion of beautiful freedom, echoing off the caldera walls, which seemed to recede into the periphery as the bird dove into a wispy cloud right into the center of Yellowstone itself, fading into that pollen backdrop, its cries fading into the symphony of a million creatures and plants down there, all in a world entirely their own and entirely hidden. And that is where I think I will stop today. Thank you guys so much for listening, like always. If you really enjoy Good Morning Gateway, I would recommend you to recommend it to your family members or your friends or your children or your children's friends or your friends' children. And I just really love the support. If you want to learn more about the Samuel Smith Mormons, about Xiaomei, Lili, and Maoping, and about what's really at the center of Yellowstone. Thank you so much for listening, and as always, have a blessed day.